You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Craig Santos Perez. Craig, thanks so much for talking with me today.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I'm honored to be here.
Craig, you're in Hawaii now, right? Is that where you're talking to me from?
Yes, it's afternoon here in Hawaii. I live on the island of Oahu. And unfortunately, the pandemic is burning pretty hot here. So we've been mostly sheltering in place all year.
And so at this point in the year, it's the same as it was all year. You're still sheltering in place?
Yes, and my kids are home from school, which is all remote. And I teach at the university here, and we're also just working remotely.
And so how has that gone? I mean, not to get into that too much, but yeah, this throughout this year, I've been talking to people in the pandemic. Now it's 2021, and how is that looking back in it? How has that affected teaching or your year in terms of writing and poetry?
Yeah, it's been really difficult. Our semester last year ended in the middle, and unfortunately, I never saw my students in person again. We only communicated via Zoom, and then my kids' school was canceled, so they've been home as well, 24 hours a day. And, you know, it's been really scary. My wife and daughter have asthma, so we've been trying to be very safe. And so, you know, it's been very stressful and scary, and I think it's made it difficult for my students as well. And, you know, just difficult to find time to write.
Right. It sure is. And what have you been working on? I know you're going to read to us a few poems today. What have you been working on these past months or years? Is there a project in particular you want to discuss? You've done a lot of different work. So where should we start? What have you been working on for yourself?
Well, so, you know, during the pandemic, my book of poetry was published, and unfortunately, all the events were canceled. And so I've been doing a lot of Zoom readings for it. The book is called Habitat Threshold, and it's a collection of poetry about environmental justice, climate change, and ecology. You know, since the pandemic happened, I've been trying to write more about you know, my experience during this time, but you know, the writing has been slow going since I don't have that much time with teaching and then also taking care of my kids who are home all day.
So let's talk about this Habitat Threshold, and part of how you approach writing is describe it as or in one way as kind of echo poetry. Could you is that what was in that book, and could you talk a little about what that actually means?
Yes, so I teach a course on echo poetry, and I consider this new collection, you know, bringing together the eco poetry I've been writing for the past like 4 or 5 years. And my basic definition of it is poetry about nature, wilderness, animals, the environment, ecological justice, climate change, and so on. And I feel like it's a really important kind of genre of poetry right now because of, you know, we're all confronted with, you know, the changing climate and how does it feel to live within these new kind of scary times, I think. And so it's been a good class to teach, you know, for my students to kind of educate themselves about this topic, but then also to express their own thoughts and emotions, you know, when living within this new era.
So this new era and echo poetry, I mean, meaning, right, the pandemic, I mean, climate change has been also always at you know, in the forefront of what's happening in terms of the planet. But the pandemic was, you know, it was such a kind of sudden thing. Did you find that this year, so your students are writing and you're writing but is their writing, it's including the pandemic. I mean, I'm just trying to define eco poetry a little bit. That includes the pandemic? I always thought it was more about kind of like the planet, but yeah, how does the pandemic fit in?
Yeah, so definitely my, you know, when it happened, my students, you know, I started having them write more about the pandemic, you know, to learn about viruses, which, you know, I didn't even know that much about either. And so, you know, thinking about what role viruses play within ecosystems, you know, how outbreaks and pandemics occur, if we think about the destruction of you know, like forests that the bats live in, and then the bats come into contact with other animals. So then we talk about, you know, food systems and, of course, you know, the way the pandemic spread through travel and, you know, the kind of just a globalized world that we live in. And, you know, eco-poetry is all about expressing those interconnections, because so much of developing an ecological consciousness is about understanding how everything is interconnected in our world, including viruses and humans.
So what will you be reading from first in terms of your poems today?
Okay, so the first poem I want to read is called Rings of Fire. And the poem takes place here in Hawaii, and it was written several years ago. And, you know, I wanted to share it because it is sadly still, you know, relevant today. Rings of Fire. We host our daughter's first birthday party during the hottest April in history. Outside, my dad grills meat over charcoal. Inside, my mom steams rice and roast vegetables. They've traveled from California, where drought carves trees into tinder. Paradise is burning. When our daughter's first fever spiked, the doctor said it's a sign she's fighting infection. Bloodshed surges with global temperatures which know no borders. If her fever doesn't break, the doctor continued, take her to the emergency room. Airstrikes detonate hospitals in Yemen, Iraq, Afghanistan, South Sudan. When she crowned, my wife said, it felt like rings of fire. Volcanoes erupt along Pacific fault lines. Sweltering heat waves scorch Australia. Forests in Indonesia are razed for palm oil plantations. Their ashes flock like ghost birds to our distant rib cages. Still, I crave an unfiltered cigarette. Even though I quit years ago and my breath no longer smells like my grandpa's overflowing ashtray, his parched cough still punctures the black lungs of cancer and denial. If she struggles to breathe, the doctor advised, give her an asthma inhaler. But tonight, we sing happy birthday and blow out the candles together. Smoke trembles as if we all exhaled the same flammable wish.
Thank you, Greg. Powerful poem, it seems, yeah, of the moment too, even though you're saying this was from a few years ago.
Yeah, from about 4 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, beautiful piece and a beautiful way to end it too, you know, flammable wishes. Yeah, just gorgeous. Yeah, do you want to say anything about that poem? I'm not sure where to jump in there, but there's so many images in there, and it's just a kind of lovely poem and also terrifying.
Yeah, that was kind of how I felt when I wrote it. It was, you know, our eldest daughter's first birthday, and you know, in our culture, that's, you know, the first birthday is very important, and so we had a big party. You know, but I couldn't get out of my mind that, you know, the April in which we were celebrating her birthday was the hottest in history. And, you know, my parents live in California, so, you know, there are a lot of fires burning in California that year. So I was worried about, you know, all the stories they were telling me And then, of course, just reading the news, you know, there was wars raging in different parts of the Middle East, and global temperatures were surging everywhere. And, you know, so I tried to just, you know, capture that moment of, you know, having this beautiful birthday party with my parents and family visiting, but also to show the interconnection with other parts of the world through heat and fire and temperature. And of course, then thinking about how that manifests in my own daughter's body through fever and just, you know, the concern of being a new parent and, you know, feeling anxiety about the world that, you know, our children are inheriting.
Right. That's the really the terrifying part. I mean, there's the, for me in the poem, you know, there's a global ecological crisis, but as a father myself, there's a kind of fear there for our children's health and survival that's particularly scary because we're not in control of it, right? It's we want to protect them, but can't. So that's very, very powerful to kind of raise that, especially to kind of marry that to ecological disaster, because this is it's I suppose it's similar. There's something here we desperately want to save, and it feels like we can't control it.
Right,
lack of control. So, Craig, you're going to read another poem. Where is this one from?
Yes, so this next poem, it actually takes place here in Hawaii again at the Waikiki Aquarium. So we'll go from fire to water, I suppose. And this poem is called A Sonnet at the Edge of the Reef. We dip our hands into the outdoor reef exhibit and touch sea cucumber and red urchin as butterfly fish swim by. A dolphin explains, once a year, after the full moon, when tides swell to a certain height and salt water reaches the perfect temperature, only then will the ocean cue coral polyps to spawn in synchrony a galaxy of gametes, which dances to the surface, fertilizes, opens, forms larvae, roots to seafloor, and grows generation upon generation. At home, we read a children's book, The Great Barrier Reef, to our daughter snuggling between us in bed. We don't mention corals bleaching, reared in labs or frozen. And isn't our silence, too, a kind of shelter?
Thank you. Yeah, beautiful. It's true that it's almost a kind of shelter.
Yeah, it's actually, you know, this is one of my daughter's favorite places to go in when she was younger, to the aquarium, and they have this wonderful little exhibit where you could put your hands in it and, you know, play with all the little fish and the sea cucumber, and, you know, they have a little kind of a board of looking at how, like, the corals spawn. And, you know, if you've never seen it, I recommend everyone listening to YouTube coral spawning. And it's just the most beautiful event to see. And it, you know, it requires everything from the temperature to the tide to be perfect. And, of course, that's all being threatened, unfortunately, because of, especially here in the Pacific, the ocean temperatures are warming and becoming more acidic, and so it's causing all this coral bleaching and is making it difficult for the corals to spawn.
Yeah, that's true. I know that from having a saltwater tank for a certain amount of time, and it was it's amazing how difficult it is to maintain a saltwater tank, and just how a degree change in temperature is devastating to the tank and to all the life in it. You know, it's amazing how delicate a balance that is.
Yeah,
thank you. And do you see some of those? Are you diving? Do you go diving? Because that sounds amazing. You know,
I've never seen it in person, but like I said, you know, I've kind of seen pictures and videos of it, and you know, you can kind
of coral spawning. You know, a coral is actually kind of reproducing, essentially, right?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And you know, so it's just an amazing event that you know is sadly being threatened here in Hawaii and across the Pacific. But there are a lot of you know great scientists that are you know are trying to you know as I mentioned in the poem to grow coral in labs and to freeze them right. to make sure you know they can be safe, and then also to actually plant new coral gardens to try to regrow some of the coral in spots of the reef where they have died.
Hmm. Well, thank you. You're reading one more poem, right? Where is this one from?
Yeah. So. The final poem is, you know, also takes place here in Hawaii, and it's dedicated to a native Hawaiian bird called the Kauai O'o, whose song was last heard in the forest here in 1987. It's called The Last Safe Habitat. I don't want our daughter to know that Hawaii is the bird extinction capital of the world. I don't want her to walk around the island feeling haunted by tree roots buried under concrete. I don't want her to fear the invasive predators who slither, pounce, bite, swallow, disease, and multiply. I don't want her to see paintings and photographs of birds she'll never witness in the wild. I don't want her to imagine their bones in dark museum drawers. I don't want her to hear their voice recordings on the internet. I don't want her to draw a timeline with the years each was first collected and last sighted. I don't want her to learn about the Kauai O'o, who was observed atop a flowering ohia tree, calling for a mate day after day, season after season, because he didn't know he was the last of his kind. Until one day, he disappeared forever into a nest of avian silence. I don't want our daughter to calculate how many miles of fencing is needed to protect the endangered birds that remain. I don't want her to realize the most serious causes of extinction can't be fenced out. I want to convince her that extinction is not the end. I want to convince her that extinction is just a migration to the last safe habitat on Earth. I want to convince her that our winged relatives have arrived safely to their destination, a wondrous island with a climate we can never change and a rainforest fertile with seeds and songs.
Thank you. Very beautiful, very moving. That one had a yeah, big emotional impact on me. That's a powerful poem. You know, this idea also, again, you know, I relate to it as a father. You know, what a beautiful refrain. What we don't want to tell our children, you know, but what we know that they will eventually know. You know, it's kind of a sense of almost innocence, but that. One image of the bird is incredibly beautiful and very sad. I guess that's something that actually happened. This, I mean, I didn't know it was the extinction capital of the world of birds. That's kind of shocking.
Yeah, sadly, there's you know so many invasive species here in Hawaii and other Pacific islands where you know many of our native birds are either extinct or endangered. And you know, a lot of people are trying to protect them, but it's been very difficult. And the story of the bird in this poem is true. And when I read about it, it was totally devastating. Just hearing about the last bird of this species, just calling, you know, trying to find a mate in the forest, and you know, season after season calling, but no other birds came because he was the last one. You know, until of course he died as well. And, you know, just very, very sad story that, as you said, as parents, you know, we don't want to tell, you know, our kids to learn about these stories, but sadly they, you know, at some point they have to, and it is a loss of innocence, as you put it. And, you know, as the other poem mentioned, you know, silence can be a kind of shelter, but we all know that we, you know, we can't remain silent all the time. And at some point, you know, we all have to confront what is happening in our world and you know, do something about it.
Hmm. Yes, yes, that is true. Thank you for sharing those poems. And you're working on, well, a book just came out. Your book just came out. Do you want to say anything about that? Or there'll be links in here where people can find your books and learn more about what's happening. Habitat Threshold is the book that just came out, which there'll also be a link to here. Is there anything you want to say about that, about Habitat Threshold?
Well, just, you know, really to say thank you again for including me on this interview. You know, like I said, the book came out last March, and so right when everything was shut down. And so I'm thankful that the book has received, you know, many positive reviews, and, you know, a lot of people have found it moving, and it's been taught in several courses, especially eco poetry courses. And so I'm happy the work is getting out there, and just, you know, appreciate folks reading the book, you know, people who are interested in literature from the Pacific. And, you know, just, you know, a lot of the poems that I read today are very local, about Hawaii and the Pacific, and then other poems make more connections to global and planetary issues, since, you know, that's an important part of eco poetry as well, to make the connections between place and the planet.
Mm. Well, thank you for that, for writing that. And Craig, I just want to ask you one more question before we go, which is, what are you reading at the moment? I'm always curious what everyone's reading.
Yes, thank you. I'm reading an anthology called When the Light of the World Was Subdued, Our Songs Came Through. And it's a Northern anthology of Native Nations poetry. So, you know, if listeners just Google that, a Northern anthology of Native Nations poetry. It was edited by Joy Harjo, the current U.S. Poet Laureate, along with contributing editors. And it's thus far the most substantial anthology of Native poetry across the U.S. And it's an incredible anthology. It's about 450 pages, and so it'll keep you warm throughout the winter, no doubt. And, you know, I highly recommend it.
Craig, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today. I really appreciate your work, and thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you so much, and I hope you stay safe and well through these difficult times.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.